Hello there, listener. I'm Luke Clancy, and you're welcome to the Culture File Debate, which this time is emphatically coming live from the Boris Festival of Writing and Ideas. At least that is if it's 6:31 on a Saturday, 7th of June. And in all other cases, you'll be listening to some captured, bottled, fixed version of our very special moment here in the chapel. But that's fine too, because it's fixed moments that we're fixing on this time, as our festival panel thinks about what photographs do, and in particular, what photographs of authors do. You're very photogenic, somebody said to me again recently, and they meant it well, but you know what it means, that somehow the you that they were face to face with had been improved by the camera's quick-witted ministrations, like a mothering handkerchief wiping away a smear of chocolate. Only in the photograph there. Back here, live at 6:32, nothing has changed, but somewhere else, which inevitably means online, that improved me has gone off to share its stories with all the other slightly improved, or indeed less comely, or blinking, or slack-jawed doppelgangers. And then there are author photographs. Why are there author photographs? Doesn't the existence of an author negate the need of a photo? What is this curious artifact that wants to bridge the gap between the private act of writing and the very public business of being a writer? To help us navigate this territory, we have four fascinating guests. We have with us today Samantha Harvey. Hello, Samantha. We're in a very strange arrangement, I forgot to say. We're in the chapel here, and on the altar are our four writers, and pulpit here, I'm in front of them. So it's quite a strange dynamic for a radio show. Let's see how it all goes. Anyway, hello, Samantha, who you all know is very much a festival fixture and has been talking a lot today. So thank you very much. Like all our guests, thank you very much for coming along and making that effort to come into the dusk with us. She's the Booker Prize-winning author of Orbital, which is a fantastic version of making a zoom out to actually get up into a spaceship, at least in our imaginations. Here with us also is Helen MacDonald. Hello. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Whose nature writing, most memorably in H is for Hawk, has given us a powerful way to look at wildness, but who has recently moved into S is for sci-fi, co-writing with Sin Bloche. Hello, Sin is also here with us today. Hi. A novel about the weaponization of nostalgia, among other things, which is maybe also what a photo does. And we also have Andrei Soldatov, who is the founder of the Argentura.ru website, investigative journalist supreme, whose work on surveillance and digital privacy makes him perhaps uniquely qualified to discuss what it means to be seen and to choose how we're seen. So each of our guests has brought a favorite photograph of themselves. And there's a little smile there for all of you who are missing that at home on the altar there. A favourite photograph of themselves. Great in our image-free medium, obviously. But we do have four terrific writers who will somehow make us see what we can't see. And we're going to have a look at those photos in a minute. But I just wanted to start everybody by asking, just to get this clear from the beginning, on a scale of where one is under attack and 10 is right at home, how do you feel when somebody is taking a photograph of you, Helen?
Well, I'm afraid it's 10. My father was a press photographer, so my entire childhood was nothing but photographs being taken of me and my brother. In fact, so much so that if someone walks in front of me now and turns quickly, I will instinctively flinch, expecting there to be a photograph. So I have no photo face. I'm all over the place. It's completely normal for me to be photographed.
Yeah. We do have a photo face of you here, though, which we'll have a look at in a minute. Samantha, how are you on that?
I would be more at the under attack end, I think, particularly as I get older. I didn't feel it quite so much 15 years ago, but now, yeah.
Sin, you're at the younger end of the altar there.
Sure. I would say if I could get to a negative number, then that's where I'm at. I feel a difficulty when it comes to like seeing how other people see me, because I have an image of myself in my head, and it's always a little bit of an attack when I see myself in a picture. Like, oh no, that's what it is.
Andre, attacks and pictures are maybe a little too close to the bone for you, but how do you feel when somebody's photographing you? I'm guessing it's not a great feeling when you're a Russian investigative journalist.
Yeah, especially now because I live in exile in London and I am on the wanted list of the Russian authorities. But if we are talking about photographs taken by professional photographers and journalists, of course it's something about 9 or 10 because I understand it's part of the profession. And for me, you just immediately switched into professional mode and that's it.
Do it now.
I'm trying to.
For everybody who can't see, he was in very much in professional mode there. Okay, so we have everybody's special photographs and a screen. I swear, people at home, there's a huge screen. I've never seen such an enormous screen as we have in the chapel today. And the first photograph is one that Samantha has given us. And I want to have a little look at that photograph. And for the people who can't see it, Samantha, maybe you would tell us what they're seeing on the screen. It's that photo that you gave us earlier. And it's now visible. It's two people with a parrot.
That's actually me.
That's Helen.
Oh, it's Helen's.
Surprise, surprise. Mystery voice.
Makes a lot more sense. Helen.
It does make more sense. It's less space and more birds. I'm so sorry, Sam. I'm gonna have to talk about this picture.
I was looking at you, Samantha, and you were going, what is he talking about?
Yeah, no, it's a bird picture. And it was taken, I think, in about 1974, 75. And it's taken at a local zoo to where I grew up called Bird World. It's my father holding me in his arms. I'm wearing a kind of very dodgy 1970s anorak with white stripes on the arms. He's wearing his custom suit. He always wore a suit. And he's lifting me up to show me this parrot who, you know, looks venerable, this Amazon parrot. And there's something about this photograph that just gives me that absolute joy because he's showing me something that he knows I'm going to be curious and find beautiful, and I loved birds. And it just sort of sums up, I think, I miss my father, you know, he passed away in 2007, but it was a sense he was always kind of holding me up to show me what it meant to see beauty in the world and how important it was to be curious and to take notice of what was around us, which was part of his trade as a photographer, obviously, was to capture moments. And I think my mother took this photograph and I've always just found it, you know, very moving in a sense of it's kind of my life in miniature. You know, it's
where do you keep it? Do you have it in a box with others or is it on
a phone? Well, you know, again, having a photographer father, there are just endless albums at home. It's quite terrifyingly sort of self-indulgent to keep them all. But yes, it's in an album. It's stuck in with Pritt stick glue, probably curling a bit at the edges.
But you didn't use that as an author photo as of yet, maybe.
No, who knows? Maybe the next one.
The next one here that I'm showing to the audience is of the gentleman on the altar. This is a very particular photo. It's of a young man in Moscow holding a laptop. Tell us about this photo, Andre. This is one that in your new book you were talking about as a marks a particular kind of moment in the development of your career and maybe the Russian authorities' attitude to you.
Well, to be honest, it was a very special moment in Russian history, not because, obviously, of my photograph, but because the year was 2000 and Vladimir Putin just became Russian president. And we all knew back then already that it's going to be tough, that he would bring lots of people from security services, from the KGB to power. So that is why, actually, this photograph is taken and you can recognize the building behind me. It is Lubyanka, the headquarters of the KGB, and these days of the FSB, the successor to the KGB. And for this very reason that Putin became the president, me and several of my colleagues, we decided to do something about it, and we launched our website. And the idea was that, look, we live in a new world, and it's 21st century almost, and we can do something which was not really possible for the generation of for the previous generations of Russian or Soviet journalists to investigate the activities of Russian security services. So the idea was that we can use these new technologies, the internet basically, and we could talk and communicate with journalists around the world and also across the country to collect information about what the Russian securities were up to. And when we launched the website in September, in December, the photograph of the New York Times went to Moscow to take a photograph of me. And our website, by December, lived on this laptop. So the whole thing was actually on this laptop. And I, to be honest, lots of people ask me, what, you were brave back then? No, I thought it was absolutely normal for a journalist to choose such a topic, because it was clear that the topic was it's going to be really big. And I was really young. I was 24 years old, and I wanted to be famous. And I had all these ambitions, and I thought that if we're going to write something about these guys, and back then it was even possible to visit this building. I was several times in this building talking to people there. I thought I could become really famous journalist and it would be fine. I was very pleased, and to be honest, for me it was a big thing that the New York Times decided to do a story about our website. But now these days I think it's a very sad photograph, because it's about the hopes of the whole generation of Russian journalists. We all came of age in the late 1990s and the 2000s, and our hopes were completely crushed now, and most of my friends, like me, live in exile. And yes, you're right, when we, with my partner Irina, we wrote a book which actually out this month in the States and in the UK, Our Dear Friends in Moscow, we revisited some of his photographs, and the feeling was very sad. Like, you can see these hopes, and you know what happened next.
Very sad. Samantha, I'm going to ask you to make a very special effort for us. I want you, if you could, to draw from your mind rather than the screen, the image, the photograph that you keep. Maybe it's in a box somewhere, but you keep it close and you know where it is and you haven't lost it over the years. What would that photograph be for you?
Well, I do have it here with me, but no one else can see it because it's in one of these little crazy light boxes. Wow. Does anyone remember these? This isn't good radio, but it's like a little...
it is part of the course, though.
Thumb sort of size picture of tiny me. I don't know, maybe 4 years old or something. And I've got one of my mum as well. And there was one of my dad and my sister, but I don't know where those have gone. And we were on holiday, I think in Cornwall probably, which my parents told us was in another country, and we believed them for a long time until I was about 22.
Well, lots of Cornish people believe that as well.
Yeah, I think so. And they told us there was a time difference to get there as well. We used to complain about the length of the journey, and they would say, no, it's not a long journey, it's just there's a time difference. And so there's nothing special about the picture. I'm just sitting, I'm about four, I'm sitting at a table in a restaurant, in a hotel or a B&B or something. There's a woman standing behind me who's got, all you can see are her legs, and she's got sort of lovely legs. And everyone just looks at her legs. They don't even look at me when they look at the picture. Do you want to see?
It's amazing, this picture.
Oh, wow.
And the reason that this is special to me is because there's something about it being in this little light box and looking at it sort of through a little tunnel of light that feels more like looking back at my past self than if it were just a sort of 2D photograph. There's a sort of sense of being transported, and I showed it to my mum the other day, who'd forgotten all about it, and she looked and she gasped when she saw it. She was like, oh, there's you! As if someone had put my child self in there, you know. And so there's something about the containment of it and the way you have to look at it into the light that just feels like looking back into the past. And the same for the photo of my mum. You know, I find them quite moving.
I mean, they remind me of Helen and Sin, your book, Prophet, where memories kind of become like tangible objects. They're things that you can touch. Maybe, I don't know how many people have read Prophet. Tell us a little bit about, I think sometimes you call them telltales, which is what Samantha has there. They're like little telltales of her past, maybe.
So the idea of a telltale is in the book, the objects are actually called EPCOs, and they're generated objects through this substance called profit, where it finds, it helps you find the object that brings you the most safety from your past. And because of how we react to nostalgia, safety, and things that we've lost, people get attached to these objects and they go into a catatonic state. And they can't be taken away from these objects. They will die or go into a terrible coma. But the idea of a telltale in the book is, we took it from Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart, where it's separate from the object, but it still keeps going. And it's clearly not of what we picture, like a heart or a person or an object to be. It's completely different, but we know what it is. So we call them telltales when they're moving, when they're realer. And that's very much like what Samantha has in her hand, because it's not just the image, it's not just the object, but in this scenario and in our scenario, it creates a realness, because like the quality of light that you've used in those little light boxes, it also has a roundness to the image, which brings it forward from the past.
Yeah.
And it is deeply moving. It's beautiful, actually.
We were talking about author photographs, Samantha. I wonder, you know, with the Booker, and I think you were talking about this morning, the sort of endless trail of people wanting to talk to you about that book and having to be more visible. Do you have a different relationship to your author photo than you did with previous books? Like what it means to you now as what it meant when you didn't have a Booker or people chasing you all the time?
I don't know if I have a different relationship to it, but I think something that you discover very quickly when you're an author, and I guess when you have any kind of public presence, is that your public image isn't your own, and that, you know, you get photographed at festivals or whatever. Someone, a photographer, always just ambushes you from somewhere and takes your picture. And then that appears in The Guardian or in The Times or something further down the line. And you have no control over that image. No one sort of runs it by you. And even if you disapproved of it, it would still be out there. I think I'm sort of resigned to the fact that I can't control my public image at all. And maybe, you know, for higher grade celebrities, there is a level of control that's there. I don't know. But it's something that I've kind of given up on being upset about, I think.
It is true. You do need a sort of measure of, you know, resignation, I think.
Yeah.
Very resignation gentle. Or zen.
Or zen, yeah.
Let's call it zen.
Yeah.
The other extreme is the thing that Andre has. It's when this photograph that we're looking at was published in the New York Times was when they put him on the wanted list. And then they found another photograph of you. This was pulled up from your passport photograph, and suddenly when you were on the website, you were another version of you that they'd managed to find. Tell us about what happened there.
Yeah, I discovered just very accidentally that I was put on the wanted list of the Russian authorities. Thanks God, in Russia, we still have a very good banking system. So the thing they do, it's much more developed than in the UK, surprisingly, to me. And so what happened, they started sending me SMS that now you owe $80,000. And I thought, of course, you know, these kind of messages, it's probably some scammers or whatever. But, I was getting more and more messages like that from two of the banks where I still had accounts. And finally, one bank was smart enough to send me the reason. And they said, look, you have a criminal investigation against you. And a friend of mine who happened to be sitting with me at that moment, also Russian journalist in exile, he told me, look, maybe it's time to check you on this website with all the people who the Russian authorities want. And I checked, and all of a sudden you see your face. And it is sort of a shock, because it's very personal. All of a sudden you understand it's not your public photograph. It's not something you thought was meant to be distributed. It's something which you use only for your own purposes, for the government, I don't know, for your passport, but it was never meant to be used by public and to be displayed, and all of a sudden it became in use, and all the media in Russia in exile, and not only in exile, they started using this photograph because it looks so sexy for them. Like all of a sudden a journalist is on the wanted list, but you feel very uncomfortable about it.
I guess so. I'm interested in the author photographs in particular, and because of one that you, that Helen and Sin, that was created in relation to your co-creation of a book. And I think it's sort of a very interesting direction for author photographs to go, you know, as maybe collaborative writing and co-creation becomes more popular, that there must be some way of representing two people together who are working together, and how would we do that? And I have to say, I think you found in Tori Frank, who's a British-based Polish photographer.
She's wonderful. Beautiful.
Absolutely wonderful. Helen, maybe you tell us a little bit about this photograph. This is the photograph that was used, I believe, in the Washington Post.
It was, yes. Tori turned up and was one of those photographers that, you know, again, because of my past, I'm always like, okay, let's check this one out. Are they any good? I'm really pompous, obviously, because of my upbringing. My dad always like, they don't know what they're doing. Tori was just an absolute pro. And from the very first moment, we knew, didn't we, that we were in good hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Tori wanted to use any means necessary to create an interesting image of both of us. So we had all kinds of options available to her. She was using, she was looking through the lens through glasses, drinking glasses, so that we could have a different distorted image of both of us. Mm-hmm. So half distorted, half in sight. And then there were mirror images. She had a stand holding mirrors in front of mirrors. Yeah. There were, eventually what we got to was this double exposure where we're overlapped with each other and our eyes are overlapped. So
it's a really arresting image. Yeah, and what's lovely about working with Tori is not only she's very funny and lovely person, but she had that extraordinary ability to be both. She's both an incredibly adept technical photographer, but also has a very, very creative, practical kind of, she can merge those two together.
Yeah.
And the final image is really, really arresting. And it does really capture, I think, for both of us,
I think
that
so.
Weird merging that happens when you really do a proper collaborative writing together.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it's also one of the first professional shoots that we did as a writing duo. And so we ended up being really lucky with Tori.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just that she was gifted and wanted to do interesting things, but she was excited to do it, you know? And so that made us excited to create the most interesting picture. Because like I said, if I could have a number with how much I'm looking forward to someone taking a picture of me, it would be in the negative. And often that means that I take really bad pictures. Most photographers get really upset with me. It's like, well, you know,
emote more.
We'll find one, I guess, you know, but with Tori, she was so excited and so gifted and so
and
good
unexpected.
With us.
I just assumed that she'd have us hold the book up with our thumbs up, you know, it wasn't like that. So
you didn't brief her or anything. She just
and she said, this is what I want to do. And we're like,
she knew that we were collaborators and she was like, I have so many ideas.
Yeah.
That was perfect.
It was great.
Yeah.
Is it a matter, Samantha, of finding a photographer who would put the you out there that you'd like to be out there, I wonder?
Yeah, I think when you find the right photographer, it really does help, doesn't it? I've had one that my publisher organised for me, and we spent hours, painful hours, but still hours in this beautiful old building in London, and she took some really lovely pictures, and I was in the middle of a very severe bout of insomnia at the time, so I wasn't looking good. And she did salvage something from them, and she was an extraordinary photographer.
Of those kind of photographs of you as author, would that be the one that you feel does somehow capture what you're trying to say, what you're trying to show?
I mean, I'll just go for anything that doesn't look abysmal, really. It's but yeah, I think she captured something about me that I recognised, but that was sort of, you know, favourable, but it felt like a me that I recognised, and it was quite moving because I was, you know, suffering so badly with insomnia, and I didn't really feel like myself, and I didn't feel I looked like myself. To have a photographer who can kind of manage to extract something of yourself from you, even in those moments, is such a gift. I have no idea how she did it. But those are the photos I tend to use. I think the worst thing is when when publishers or festivals use very old photos of you where you were considerably more good looking. and they use those, it might be 15 years old.
Yeah,
and,
that's true. Memento
Mori. And
then
Mori. You show up.
Yeah.
Particularly the little light box of you as a child. You're never less self-conscious and all those.
That's true.
Perfection. I mean, this picture that I'm still showing here, I'm really interested because of the collaborative creativity and you know, finding a way to express that. Because when you were talking earlier about writing the book together, there was this idea that maybe there was an emergent phenomenon of a third writer.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah. Yes. And when we started off, you know, believe it or not, the whole book was written pretty much. I'd never met Sin. We were friends on the internet and wrote the entire thing nearly through just direct messages on social media, which is a very weird way to write a book. Yep. Most people in the pandemic, you know, made banana bread or sourdough, but we wrote a book together. In a really weird way. So, you know, initially we were sort of tentative getting to know each other and we'd send each other stuff to read and, you know, we'd give each other notes and we'd be very sort of stung and hurt because writers are all terribly vain and terribly kind of insecure. That's just what we are. But slowly this magical thing happened.
Yeah, it's alchemy. You took two technically very different voices and we worked really hard and really joyfully, actually, to create a third thing. The joke is that we keep on arguing over who wrote our favorite part because we can't tell anymore. There's just this voice that we don't know.
And somebody has found a way of putting that into a photograph, which I think is
beautiful.
It's a really remarkable job. Well, I mean, I'm afraid all we have time for because the people from the Met are waiting to jump in. They're literally waiting in the wings at the Met to bring us Tchaikovsky's Queen of Spades. It's happening right now. But so we're going to have to call a halt. Thank you very much,
for
bringing us your photographs and talking about them. I can't help but noticing we have a very photogenic audience here with us this evening. And so in a moment, maybe you'd put your hands together and give a round of applause for Gar and Dave and Tom on sound and for our panel, Samantha, Helen, and Sin and Andre. So thank them very much and thank you all for coming along to the Culture File debate this evening. Thank you.